Welcome, negotiation enthusiasts. I am thrilled to have you here for another insightful episode. Today, we have a true luminary in the world of sales and business strategy, Professor Ray Liebman. Ray's journey in the realm of sales commenced in 1973 when he assumed the role of sales manager for the New York District at Dansky Designs. Over the years, he navigated through various pivotal positions, leaving his mark at Pfalzgraf Company as the Eastern Regional Sales Manager, Yamazaki Tableware International as Executive Vice President, and World Tableware International as Senior Vice President. In 1990, Ray embarked on a 13-year tenure at Panasonic, where he served as the Director of Commercial and Residential Product Groups, gaining invaluable experience and insight into the dynamics of the industry. Fast forward to 2001, and Ray embraced a new chapter as he transitioned into academia. He became an adjunct professor at the Rutgers Business School, imparting his wealth of knowledge to aspiring business professionals. Our paths crossed around 2010 when I had the privilege of taking Ray's Intro to Sales class at the Rutgers Business School. His teachings left a lasting impact, and I'm excited to share some of his wisdom with you today. Professor, welcome to the podcast, and it is great to see you again. Thanks for the time.
Nick, it's always a pleasure to see you again every 11 years.
11 years is a long time, but we can jump right back into it. I have some questions for you, and I think our listeners are going to be eager to hear the answers. First, you have a unique background and experience in that you worked in industry and then you moved into academia rather than pursuing one or the other. So could you take me through your journey on how you became or how you got to becoming an adjunct professor, what drove you there and how you arrived?
That's not a complicated question at all. It was something that drove me to academia simply because I really always enjoyed working with young people, always. Even when I was in sales, I always hired people that I really felt a connection with. And students are an amazing lot. They bring so much to the table that you can't even realize how much they bring unless you listen. And that's one of the virtues that I have is listening. If you listen, you will learn. Anyway, I thought that I would be leaving the industrial world, and I was looking around as to what would be an appropriate second career. And I met a professor when they asked me to teach as a lecturer in one class. One of the students invited me to teach. And it was really ironic, but the dean of the school happened to be sitting in the audience. Luck has it always. I mean, it's my whole life is luck. But anyway, he was the dean of the school. He listened to me. Then at the end of the lecture, he came up to me and said, Ray, have you ever thought of teaching? And I said, honestly, no, I'm just doing this as a favor to one of the people that I know in your class. And he said, well, I think you're making a big mistake because I think you have the character and you have the knowledge to really impress and, you know, really work with these students. So he offered me a job, not full-time, but part-time, because I was still working for Panasonic at the time and traveling around the world. So I really couldn't accept a full-time position. But he offered me a part-time position, which was phenomenal, because the class that he wanted me to teach was really not a permanent class. It was made up of MBAs, and it was called interfunctional management, which basically meant that we met once a week and we could do it via Zoom or whatever was available. And I didn't have to be in class, and yet I was the professor. So it worked out really, really fine. Taught that class, then he offered me another class, and then he offered me a class full-time, which I couldn't take because I was still working. You can't do both. You have to decide which is the most important and which one you could really devote your time to, because teaching is not a part-time job, even though my title is part-time lecturer. You take work home, you receive phone calls from them. There's a lot of things that go on in teaching. So anyway, when I started teaching, one of the professors who was the chair of the marketing department came over and said, "I think you should teach full time." And I said, "Once again, I can't." So he offered me a part-time position, which I took. And that was 23 years ago. I'm still in communication with him. He's now back as chairperson, and I haven't stopped one semester. I mean, I've gone through 23 years of teaching every single semester, which is really, I don't know if it's a record or not, but in today's world, keeping a job is not easy, especially in academia. And I've been able to maneuver my presence through academia by attending all kinds of different associations and meetings. I joined the faculty council where we had the higher ups, so I got to know all of them and they got to know me. So therefore it assured me from a relationship point of view of continuing my job. And that's what I wanted. So my job is building relationships, period. And I'm very good at building relationships.
Couple things there. One, I'm sure it is a record. You and Cal Ripken probably got the Iron Man in both of your respective industries. Two, though, you started with students and how much you like working with students and the impact that you have on them. And you talked about a lot of other reasons why you went into becoming a professor, but I want to focus on those students. What is the best thing about your role in students' lives and making an impact on their lives?
The influence I have on their lives. I don't think anyone can get closer to a younger person than a teacher. They rely on you. They depend on you. They believe you. They look forward to hearing from you. And it's just a continuation of a relationship that you started elsewhere. And now you become an influencer. They ask you all kinds of different questions that just don't pertain to the educational arena, but they ask you about personal questions. They ask you about growth in industry. What should I do? Should I take that job or I shouldn't? That was very exciting for me because I continued to fill my need to helping students and people in general. So that's why I took the position. I stayed with the position. I'm not a young chicken anymore, but I still love what I do, and I'm not going to give it up until they just drag me away with a hook, but that's going to happen.
Another thing that you mentioned that was very interesting to me is that your job is about building relationships, and from my perspective, that can apply to either of the careers that you had, either in industry or in academia, because negotiation, sales, you and I both know it's all about building relationships. So this is the part where I would ask you, what does being a business leader mean to you? But what I just want to ask you, what does being a leader mean to you? Because you've lived in two different worlds. So if I give you carte blanche to answer that how you would like, what would being a leader mean to you?
A leader goes back to the influence that you have on people and how you manage that influence, how you manage your relationship with them, what your comments are. It's all based around one familiar note, and that's how do you make friends? You know, how do you keep friends? Leadership is more than just telling people what to do. Leadership is a responsibility that you have when you accept it to enhance people's lives. So I took the position of leadership, and I've been a leader in many different of the companies that I've managed, but it's the influence factor that I have over the younger people to help them become better leaders, telling them what their responsibilities are as a leader. You know, there's a difference between a manager and a leader, and I take the position of being a leader, not a manager. Manager always puts people under the bus. Leaders take the responsibility, and I wanted to build leaders, not managers. I left the management building process to the academics. I wanted to teach everybody how to become a leader. When you run businesses, you have no choice but to be a leader. You cannot hide and you can't walk against the wall like a little mouse, you know, and then find your cubicle and then sit in your cubicle the whole day. You have to expose yourself. You have to be in front of your people. You have to lead by showing them what to do. I think part of my leadership is travel. I've done over 2.5 million miles on United Airlines alone. And that's because I wanted to be in front of the customer with my sales force. So when I had meetings with management, I always had them come with me so that they could see and learn what to do. Not that I'm the greatest leader and the greatest salesperson, but I just felt that that was part of what I owed them.
I think that's a real truth among leadership in both the business world, academic world, or in our lives in general. I like to think of it like you can tell people what to do or you can show them what to do. One's a manager and one's a leader. And if you're just telling people what to do, you're not going to get anybody to buy in with you. But if you show them what to do and bleed with them and show them the path, they're going to run through a wall for you.
You're absolutely right, Nick. It's the kind of thing that when I give responsibility, I also take responsibility. When I point to them that they did something wrong, I have three fingers pointing at me that said, maybe I should have taught them better. Maybe I should have given them more tools. Maybe I should have given them smaller tasks. So I'm always trying to reassure myself that I've done the right thing. And I think that a leader is not afraid to admit failure. It's not afraid to admit success. But more importantly, it's not to delegate poor responsibility to people that shouldn't have the responsibility. Okay, mm-hmm. We need to pick who we're going to give the responsibility to and not blame them if they can't do it.
I agree. Introspection and self-reflection are the only ways that we're going to identify what worked and keep doing it, identify what didn't work and stop doing it. But ultimately, that's how we grow as humans, as leaders, as people.
I agree 100%.
I want to shift over to the world of negotiation as the Gap Partnership is a negotiation firm and this is a negotiation podcast. But I want to take a different angle than I normally would. I want to ask you the what is alike and what is different in your negotiations from the industry that you came in versus academia? Because as we know, negotiation permeates all things in life. So I would love to hear the dichotomy between the two.
Well, I think I've always taken a position in negotiation and I've kept it up through academia, although it's much, much more difficult in academia than it is in business. Trust me, because there's a lot of people behind you in academia. In business, they're all in front of you. So it's much easier to see what their reaction is. But when I look at negotiation, my one philosophy, which I've taught everybody and I practice, is always have a win-win attitude. And what does that mean? To me, that means we both have to win in order to negotiate in the best possible venue. And I can give you a couple examples really quick. I travel a lot to China, to Singapore, and the Middle East as well. They have a different way of negotiating. And you have to learn all the different cultures when you're traveling the world from a negotiation point of view. It's not the American way. It's the universal way, okay, which is international. But one of the things that I learned from people who I negotiated with is I had a situation where my job was to get the best price, of course. And I pushed and pushed and pushed. And they finally gave in and gave me the price that I needed. Except what I did was I watched them, you know, weasel around in their chair, start perspiring. And I said, this is not a good thing. They agreed to what I wanted, but it's not a happy situation. So I went back and I said, listen, I think I was a little bit too hard on you. Okay. And they just looked at me and said, what? You know, as if I'm changing my mind. And I said, no, I'm not changing my mind. I just want to give you back 5 cents on everything you just gave me. Okay. And they all relaxed and the sweat just stopped. Why? Because I was cooperating in the negotiation phase. I was saying, I win, but I want you to win too. I don't want you to go back to your boss and say, this is what I had to give up. I wanted you to go back and say, this is what I give up, but I want it back. So I've always taken a win-win, and it's helped me throughout my career. I've never felt as if I have to win everything. I just have to win what I need, and I want to make sure there's enough on the table for them to hold their heads up. Because if I put them out of business, where am I going to go? I got to find another source. So my job is not to put them out of business by getting the best price and the lowest price. Mine is to get a win-win, a fair price.
Yeah, especially when you're dependent on those folks and these are long-term relationships that you're trying to continue into the future. It's much more important to be focused on the total value of the partnership rather than just the price, right? There's more value to be had than just on price. It's just one variable that you're negotiating, not the only variable. So you have had a lot of experiences in the academic world and the business world as a negotiator, as a salesperson. If you had to distill it down to one lesson, what is the most important lesson that you have learned from your career?
Be very careful how hard you push for what you want, because you might get it. And when you get it, you've got to perform. And for some reason, if you oversold because of your anxiousness, because of your enthusiasm, you're going to have to face the music. And that's what happened to me. I really wanted the factory to make something for me because I had a customer that asked me for it. And I just felt very close with my customer, always trying to give my customer what they need. And I pushed the factory to make it. And this was really out of the norm because basically they didn't have this technology. So they had to create a new technology just for me and my customer. We finally did do it. What happened was the customer backed out at the last minute, and I was left with a lot of inventory that I had committed to because of my passion and because of the fact that I sold a factory that they had to do it. So in the future, I stopped being so strong because I didn't realize how influential I was in a negotiation. Sometimes you don't realize your own strengths until you win. And then you say to yourself, wait a second, I didn't want all of this. I just wanted a little bit. Well, you know, the enthusiasm that one has and the encouragement that another one has and the conviction really blows a lot of people away, and they believe you 100% and they give you what you want. But then you got to perform, because after you get them to do all the things you want, then the rest of the action is in your lap. So I've learned not to push so hard. I've learned to back away when necessary and only push when I had to. That's the lesson that I learned from pushing too hard for getting what I want.
Yeah, one of the most valuable things that we have as individuals that are operating in our respective industries is our integrity, right? You have to do what you say you're going to do, and if you say you're going to do something, follow through with it. And if you overpromise and can't deliver, then the next time you make a promise, it's not going to hold very much weight. So yeah. that credibility and integrity is, I would argue, the most valuable thing that you have as an individual, and you want to make sure that you're not giving it away.
Nick, it was a very important lesson for me. It was an important lesson for all of my staff that worked with me. And I was apologetic to the factory, to the senior managing directors. And all I did for the next year was to try like heck to get rid of all the merchandise that I bought. So that was on my mind. Luckily, we did get rid of it. But it really made me think about what I did and how strong I am sometimes, and to back down.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that story, specifically because you read about or hear about individuals in business and all the successes that they had. And if you listen to the story they tell, you would think that they did everything right and made every step exactly as it should be. And it was a yellow brick road the whole way. But there's a lot of trips and falls and speed bumps. And one, you need to get over them. You need to get around them. You need to get past them, but you need to look back and learn from them so you don't trip again. And next time a pothole's coming, you can avoid it and you don't, step in it.
100%. 100%.
Last question for you. And yeah. I know this is going to be a hard one for you because you don't deal with young people very often. But what advice would you give to some young folks, maybe some students that have graduated a year or two ago, they're starting their careers, and they have aspirations to follow a path similar to yours?
I think the young people today are extremely resilient to change. I think that they're very, very pushy, very tenacious. They want everything, but they want it now. They don't want to work for it. They don't want to wait for it. So I think that I tell students to be patient, become the best that you can be, and the money will always be there. Don't switch jobs just because of an additional $5,000 or whatever. That's not, or it shouldn't be, your motivating factor. Your motivating factor should be trying to be the best that you can be at what you do. And that by itself will lead you to whatever you want it to lead to. So I think that I'm trying to develop leadership. I'm trying to develop patience. I'm trying to develop integrity. And I'm trying to develop people who are willing to work hard for what they want.
I love that. I tell people that have asked me similar questions, or maybe I try and mentor, that skills and capabilities are more valuable than dollars and cents to you. So if you have two options, go to the place that is going to develop your skills and develop your capabilities, because you're going to be a more well-rounded person, leader, industry expert, whatever you want to be. And the money will be there afterwards.
The money will always be there if you're the best that you could be, because that's what people are willing to pay for. But if you're not the best and all you did was go for the money, at some point it will dry up.
Well, Professor, this has been a great conversation. Let's make sure it's not 13 years between our next one, okay?
I don't know if I could live that long, but that's okay.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. It was great catching up with you. And next time I'm in New Brunswick, I'll make sure I give you a call.
It's my pleasure, and good luck to you as well.
Thank you very much.